This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Illinois has experienced several heat waves this summer, and we're expected to see another one later this week. And that means people using air conditioning, more power usage overall, which raises questions about the stability of the state's power grid and the power plants that produce the energy we use. And all this comes after a state law passed last year that set Illinois on a path to phase out carbon emissions by 2045, diversifying renewable energy workforce and relying less on what would you call legacy energy providers such as coal. Joining us now to talk about the differences between a power grid and a power plant and many other aspects of things we're going to be watching as the heat climbs again in Illinois is Carrie Leiterson, a reporter for Energy News Network and a professor at the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University. Carrie, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Also with us to talk about how heat waves and droughts affect our power system is Ashlyn Stilwell, an associate professor of civil and environmental engineering at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Ashlyn, welcome to the 21st Show to you as well.
Thanks, Brian.
And listeners, if you want to join us, if you have a comment or question about energy in Illinois, 800-222-9455 is our number. That's 800-222-9455. Do you find yourself using more power than usual this summer? Have you been keeping an eye on your electricity bill? What have you done to manage your energy consumption? 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455, or tweet us at 21st Show. So, Carrie, I want to begin with you, and maybe just to sort of set a baseline for our conversation. Can you talk about how the power grids work in Illinois?
Sure. I'll try to keep this brief and clear as possible.
Well, sometimes we say, explain it like I'm a smart 13-year-old. So
right. I'll try. Yeah. So, I mean, on the most basic level, you know, the grid is delivering power to all of us and it's interconnected. There's a number of sort of separate grids across the country. We heard a lot about the Texas one during the winter storm crisis the other year. So Illinois, it's not like we just have our own grid. You know, we're part of larger grids and Illinois is actually part of two separate sort of grid management systems. Northern Illinois, including the Chicago area, is part of PJM, which stretches more to the east. And then the rest of Illinois is part of a grid system called MISO, which includes a swath down the center of the country, including the Midwest and Louisiana, parts of 15 states. So, and that's in the MISO areas where the concerns about reliability and blackouts have arisen. But yeah, basically the grid gets, you know, there's long distance transmission lines that move power over long distances. And then there's the localized distribution grid that gets the power actually to our houses. And, you know, we're getting power right now from a number of, most of our power comes from power plants that, you know, are sending it out over long distances and also wind farms. But distributed solar is, you know, one of the things that's really changing the grid in Illinois because we have a law that really incentivizes more solar in a lot more places throughout the grid and other innovations too are making the grid much more decentralized than it has been in the past. So we are in that transition.
And I think this sort of interoperability or distribution, maybe it's something that's hard to wrap your head around because we have listeners who live maybe near one of the nuclear power stations or in Springfield, they're at City Water, Light and Power. They have a coal-fired power plant there. Or if you're working at the University of Illinois, there's a coal plant on the campus there. You're not necessarily, when you flip a light switch, it's not necessarily the power is coming from the power plant closest to you, right?
Well, I think the way the electrons actually move, you know, they may be, but that's almost irrelevant because, and Ashlyn could maybe speak more about the physics of it, but it's really regardless of, you know, what electrons exactly are getting to you, it's just this big interconnected and responsive system that's constantly redirecting power in all different places that it needs to go. And, you know, we may be getting, I mean, we're at least on paper getting power, you know, we can be getting power from several states away. There's these complicated long-term and spot market auctions and sales that determine where we theoretically get our power from and, you know, where an individual electron may come from could be a different question.
Sure. But Well, maybe we don't have to get too bogged down in the physics. So Ashlyn, let me bring you into the conversation and then say, just generally speaking, where does the power that's generated in Illinois from our nuclear plants, from those wind farms we all drive past on the highway, where does that get used?
A lot of that power is, as you mentioned, Brian, generated here in Illinois. And historically, Illinois has been a net electricity exporter. So we have been kind of a powerhouse within these different grids in generating that electricity and then exporting it to different locations after then also meeting the needs of Illinoisans. As Karen mentioned, there's these once the electrons are on the grid, it's very difficult to track specifically where they came from because the grid is constantly balancing these supplies and demands such that, yes, when I flip a switch on in my office on the University of Illinois campus, it might or might not be electrons that were generated at the Abbott power plant a mile to the west of me.
So some of your research has looked into how droughts and heat waves affect power plants. What do they do, in particularly in relation to the state's new nuclear fleet?
Really good question. And as you phrased it, Brian, is these legacy energy providers, the conventional way in which we have generated electricity in Illinois has been through those legacy providers of big power plants, nuclear, coal, natural gas, and those power generation technologies require cooling, and we most typically do that with water. If you think about how we spend time in the summer as humans, it is much easier to cool down in a swimming pool than it is to sit around in the heat and allow ourselves to sweat and evaporate our water that way. Power plants are doing something similar where they need to cool down in the thermodynamics of their processes. And so that's why we see a lot of those large power plants located next to a water source for cooling. And that's a different technology than what we do with wind farms that you see on the side of the highway or rooftop distributed photovoltaic solar panels that don't require water for cooling. So from the perspective of nuclear plants, they require that water for cooling and are then vulnerable to droughts and heat waves.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So now I think if people think of a lot of the lakes that they're most familiar with downstate,
right,
most of those or many of those were built for power plants, right? Lake Springfield, I think,
yep,
of San Chris Lake. With the world, so how does climate change potentially affect this, the needs of these power plants?
Climate change plays out in a few ways, and that is from both supplies and demands. As we experience heat waves, as you mentioned at the very beginning here, heat waves cause us as consumers to consume more electricity for air conditioning, so there's a higher demand. And at the same time, the power plants are in the business of generating electricity. They are constrained in their supplies. That hotter temperature makes it more difficult to cool down the power plant. And climate change very much plays out from the perspective of water resources in both the quantity of water that is available. We might have more droughts, more floods. So we have an unpredictability of the quantity of water, but we also have a difference in water quality. And the water quality that is most pertinent to these coal and nuclear power plants from the perspective of cooling is water temperature. That's what those reservoirs, the lakes that you mentioned, are doing, is helping to dissipate the heat from the power plant and discharge waste heat then into that cooling water source.
Oh, that's interesting. We need to take a break, but briefly, can a lake be too warm to effectively function for a power plant?
Yes.
Wow.
In short, yes.
What would the temperature be? I mean,
Different power plants have different thermal discharge limits, and they're usually in the neighborhood of 90 to 95 degrees Fahrenheit, the temperature that can come out of the power plant into that cooling reservoir. And that heat dissipates by mixing around and conducting heat to different parts of the lake.
Oh, interesting.
But they can get warm.
Okay. We're going to continue this conversation. We need to take a break. We're talking with Ashlyn Stilwell, professor at the University of Illinois, and Carrie Leiterson, who's a reporter with the Energy News Network. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us. Are you using more power than usual this summer? Are you doing things to manage your energy consumption? We want to hear from you. 800-222-9455 as we are getting another heat wave this week. We've had warnings of potential rolling blackouts to manage shortfalls in power production. 800-222-9455. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we are talking about energy and power. And there have been warnings of potential rolling blackouts this summer because of generation shortfalls, putting stress on the MISO grid, which serves a lot of downstate Illinois. As we heard, Illinois is basically served by two power grids. One connects the Chicagoland area with all the way over to the East Coast. There's another one that does a lot of the central part of the country, and that is called MISO. We are, most of our listeners, I think, are probably on the MISO area. A few in northern Illinois might be on the PJM connection. But we're talking about all this with Ashlyn Stilwell, who is a professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, civil and environmental engineering. Also, Carrie Leiterson, a reporter for Energy News Network, also professor at the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern. And 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation, or tweet us at 21st Show. We had one user say, "I'm happy to see prices rise, as that may be what finally incentivizes conservation. For our part, we have solar and batteries, and our bill is $0. But more importantly, we're being environmentally conscious. We drive an electric car fueled by the sun, and all our appliances are electric as well." So that is their perspective. What are you doing to rein in power consumption, if anything, this summer? Are you finding your bill is higher because of the heat waves we've already been through? 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. So, Carrie, let's talk about some of these warnings we've gotten from MISO about the grid. What are some of the potential problems that are being identified there?
Yeah, well, basically, MISO has let all its member utilities and everyone that has their power managed through, you know, MISO's part of the grid. It's warned them that there may not be sufficient capacity available, generation capacity, to meet the highest demand that could happen, especially with high temperatures. And that has partly to do with coal-fired power plants retiring, mostly for economic reasons. They've closed down, and so MISO has essentially told utilities that it may need to put out these orders, which it's allowed to do, telling different utilities that energy needs to be conserved in their areas, and parts of the grid may need to actually be disconnected, or not exactly disconnected, but, you know, have their power off for certain amounts of time, which is the rolling blackouts we've heard about. And, you know, that may not happen at all. That's kind of a worst case scenario. And there's even if we're in these, you know, dire conditions that MISO talked about, there's still things that utilities can do to manage their power and to try to minimize or avoid any actual rolling blackouts. But yeah, it is, you know, there is, for various reasons having to do with how the markets are run and the closing coal plants, and most importantly, the something that is being remedied slowly, the need for more long distance transmission lines to get power to the MISO area, especially from big wind farms further out west. The slowness in building that transmission that we knew we needed for a long time is part of the reason that there's a crisis right now. But building that transmission has been approved, so that, you know, should be hopefully not an issue in future summers.
And that was just announced last week, right?
Or, I think so. Yeah.
So what? I also understand that Ameren, a big utility in central Illinois, is being asked to consider switching from MISO over to the PJM grid. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, that's been talked about for a while. And there was also talk in the negotiations of the different energy bills. We passed a big energy bill a year ago in Illinois. There's also been efforts to sort of have the state of Illinois procure the capacity for making sure we can meet our generation needs. That's another thing that Ameren was trying to do. Basically, it would be an effort like PJM is the only, I think it's the only grid in the country that has low risk of not meeting its peak demand this summer. So PJM runs its capacity auctions in a different way. It pays power generators in a different way and at a higher rate for being ready to provide power if needed. So there has been this push. This has been going on for a while, talking about moving more of Illinois, including Ameren territory, into PJM. And there's a lot of financial and political aspects to it. But I'm sure that's, you know, looking attractive to people right now.
Yeah. Better than a blackout, right? Ashlyn, last fall we mentioned this energy legislation that Illinois passed last year, aiming to phase out carbon emissions by 2045, focusing more on renewable energy sources, including solar and wind, as opposed to as what we called legacy coal, for example. But there's a variability, right? Can you talk about the strain that Illinois is seeing on its grid as it makes this transition?
There's a variability that comes along with wind and solar, and that's because those resources are not dispatchable, as we would term in the energy sector, where you can't deliberately turn them on and tell the wind to blow, for example. And
I gotta say, I was driving on 57 on Saturday, and it's pretty rare, but the windmills were perfectly still. I don't feel like I see
that.
That
is a rare sight to see that. Yeah. Normally they are moving along, sometimes blinking in synchronous flashing.
I love that. Yes.
So yeah, there is a challenge that comes with pure wind and solar from an intermittency perspective, but there's a lot of things that we have already demonstrated in the grid on how to successfully integrate those intermittent renewables into the grid and maintain stability, and also a lot of advances that have happened with energy storage. With wind and solar plus storage, there's a lot of movement that we can make in transforming the electricity grid to a low carbon or no carbon grid and get rid of coal generation and the carbon emissions that come along with it. And from the energy energy perspective, I'll just add, a lot of researchers agree that we can very easily, with the right technologies and the right infrastructure, power the grid with 80% renewables. It's the last 20% that take a lot of work and investment and effort to get there. We're not close to 80% yet, so we've got a long way to go in building out renewables.
And can you talk about where the nuclear fleet fits into this equation? And, you know, I know that I've talked to some environmentalists who don't see nuclear as green energy or clean energy, but it is certainly carbon free, right?
Exactly. Nuclear is carbon free. And that's something that environmentalists have struggled with, of what do we do with nuclear? Because it's not renewable, but it is carbon free. And it is a carbon free source of reliable power that we have already invested in as the state of Illinois through our nuclear fleet. And we are the largest number of nuclear power plants in any state in the country. And those power plants are generating carbon-free electricity and doing so in a way that we can dispatch and we can control those power plants and the electrons that they are generating on the grid. I personally think that nuclear plays an important role in a carbon-free future. It is silly to dismiss resources out of hand when we have this existing carbon-free source of electricity. But as you mentioned, Brian, this is not a clean-cut issue, and a lot of environmentalists aren't quite sure what to think or aren't on board with nuclear.
No, and I mean, well, and there's possible new technologies to come online too, right?
Correct.
Different ways of doing nuclear power that may yet be a little more appealing to environmentalists. Carrie, let me ask you about, you mentioned coal plants going offline because of the economics. Of course, this has turned into a political fight, though, too. And some I've seen at least one lawmaker in Southern Illinois pointing the finger of blame at this energy law in Illinois for these potential blackouts if they happen this summer. Are coal plants specifically responding to the law in Illinois? How do you see that picture?
Yeah, I mean, there's really a lot of misinformation and just framing that isn't correct around what's going on with the reliability and energy sources. And Ashlyn kind of alluded to this. So the law that was passed last year says that most of the state's coal plants have to close by 2030, but coal plants have been closing already, essentially voluntarily, because the finances, the economics don't work anymore, like their power isn't competitive on the open markets. And Illinois deregulated its power generation system 20 some years ago. So basically, these power plants, unlike most states where power companies can bill ratepayers directly for the costs of producing their power. In Illinois, all of our coal plants and our nuclear plants are competing on an open market, selling the power that they generate. So if the prices they can get for that power aren't competitive with power from gas plants or renewables increasingly, they're going to close, in the simplest terms. So, I mean, a lot of coal plants in Illinois have closed already, and more will close before 2030. Probably most of them will close before the law would even force them to close. So the law in that case is almost irrelevant. It's really the economic situation that we've gotten ourselves into, and just the fact that renewables are becoming more and more cost competitive. And the nuclear plants did get basically big subsidies in the past two energy laws, and coal plants didn't. So, the nuclear plants, the Exelon, the owner says that they would have closed, some of them would have closed too, if they didn't get these subsidies. So it's just a tricky situation financially that Illinois has gotten itself into with for these power plants, which are needed not only for Illinois, but also for the larger area that we export to. But we've been making it without the coal plants that have closed so far. And gas plants are, a little bit trickier issue, and those have to close under the law by 2045 as well. And gas plants are really important to kind of fill the gap when renewables are intermittent, at least the way the grid's structured right now. But the coal plants, yeah, they're really a political issue that the politics and the rhetoric around them doesn't really match with the more complicated reality.
Let's go to the phones. Mark is calling from Chicago on line 4. Mark, thank you for calling in.
Yeah, thanks for the show. It's awesome to hear two people who are so super well-versed in energy issues, and a lot of stuff that I hear from people who are well-intentioned but really don't understand the system. So this is fantastic. I just wanted to mention energy efficiency and the concept of megawatts, meaning whatever you save is whatever kilowatt hour or megawatt hour you save is one you don't have to produce. From generation production to transmission to substation to to distribution in the neighborhoods and to the end users. So it sounds simple, and this is a very low-level, low-hanging fruit, but air conditioning, we've been doing a lot of it, and air conditioning did break our central air, and for one night it was up to 84, and I would not recommend this, but that's a little bit too hot, but with fans, yeah, it really wasn't that bad. We do keep it generally around 78, which is fine with a fan on.
I gotta say, a little warm for me, but
in that bed's fine. But without some airflow,
Fair enough.
Like crazy. So, but fan and also we're time day rate, so we use air conditioning pre-cool and then don't use it from 3 to about 7 o'clock.
All right, Mark, thank you so much for the call. We're almost out of time. Ashlyn, final thoughts, maybe about 30 seconds as we are winding down our conversation about what people might expect in the weeks ahead.
I think the weeks ahead are going to be interesting to follow along. And to Mark's point, efficiency is very much low-hanging fruit, and the kilowatt hours that didn't need to be generated are kilowatt hours that are not consuming water in the process, which helps with all of those heat wave issues. And one other aspect of all of this that I think we should discuss a bit is equity in the ability to afford different energy saving technologies, but also how some of these power plants affect the economies around them and the small towns around them. There will be a lot of change in the near term and the long term future.
Ashlyn Stilwell is Associate Professor of Civil and Environmental Engineering at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Carrie Leiterson is a reporter with the Energy News Network, also on the faculty at the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern. Thank you both so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's all the time we have for our show today. Tomorrow we'll be talking about esports, the rise of esports in college. So be sure to tune in tomorrow. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We will talk to you again next time.